Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I'm Alex and I'm joined by Crupper Chups.
Excuse me?
What? That's your name.
Oh yes, I'll embrace that. Yes, hello!
And Tilly Tots has returned.
Hello, pod people.
Where have you been?
I've been in Austin, Texas at Fantastic Fest.
Right. Is it?
It was, yeah. I saw lots of films, met lots of people.
Best film you've ever seen there ever?
What? The best film I've ever seen there ever? I don't know. I'm not prepped for that.
Why is this like Monday morning at school? What have you been up to the weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, what's your best film ever?
I saw about 12 films, I would say. 13 films. 14.
You were over there for how long?
The festival's 8 days.
Right.
Yeah. So at
you
least
go to
a film
Austin
a day.
A lot.
Twice a year. Mm. Every 6 months.
Mm.
And watch lots of films.
Mm.
The film I probably most enjoyed was John Wick.
Keanu Reeves.
So what's that all about, Chris?
He's a hitman.
Okay.
He's a hitman who retires to look after his sick wife, who very sadly passes away.
Oh.
He goes to a funeral and then comes home and there's a little package waiting for him. It's a little puppy dog that she sent him to start the grieving process. She says, you know, love this dog and start moving on with your life. And then Russian mobsters come. I'm welling up now. And they kill the dog. They kill the puppy dog.
That's quite a lot of spoilers.
This is the first 10 minutes.
That's okay. The setup. Right.
That's the trailer.
Okay. All right.
That's the trailer.
And then it ends.
Exactly.
The film was about John Wick hunting down the men who killed his puppy dog that represents his dead wife.
Right.
And it's brilliant. It's very. It's directed by the guys who did the stunts on Matrix.
Okay.
So it's very much designed with action in mind.
Yep.
It's kind of like it's almost like a superhero movie as well.
You were telling me something interesting about the gunplay. They've coined a new term, a new style.
Yeah, he kind of does kung fu, but with the gun, like, does kung fu moves, but shoots at the same time in people's heads, and they call it gun fu.
Right.
And it's pretty impressive.
Okay, because that doesn't sound particularly good when you're describing it.
I can imagine how that could look really cool.
Yeah.
Like a choreography of The Matrix, but with more blood.
It's very silly, but really good fun. If you like your action, spectacular.
I also like films, revenge dramas, revenge thrillers, where the motivation, the final straw, is the death of a dog.
Yeah.
Like there's a
good there many of them?
Red, with Brian Cox, is probably the only one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
101 Dalmatians at a push.
I don't think it's really a revenge
it is.
Killing.
Oh, it is.
I don't think anybody dies in it, do
it
they?
Is. I don't know.
It's got some really good actors in it as well, though, in the smaller roles. Willem Dafoe's in it, Ian McShane, people that kind of chew up the studio when they're on screen. So that was good fun.
Yeah.
The closing night film, which I actually reviewed previous to it, was Nightcrawler, but we haven't spoken about that. Nightcrawler's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Jake Gyllenhaal might be up for an Oscar for this. It's kind of like a modern-day Taxi Driver, but set in the world of these people that chase, kind of ambulance-chasing paparazzi, who get to the scene of a crime before the police do, film it and then put it up on TMZ or sell it to the Daily Mail or whatever. Really dark black comedy, but quite it's has a lot to say about what's going on in society at the moment.
We've already got a review of that up on site if you want to learn more.
And a conversation between me and Dan.
Say what?
There was Horns, the Daniel Radcliffe horror movie based on the Joe Hill book. Bit disappointing. Mm. Didn't really work. Great book. As a film adaptation, it just...
So what falls short about it?
I think there's this real sad melancholy that's all the way through the book that they didn't really capture in the film.
Right.
It's either kind of going for the horror, jugular, or like the black comedy, or just kind of like, isn't it cool that this guy's got horns and can do this stuff? Whereas in the book, it feels much more serious and it carries a weight that...
How's Radcliffe?
He's okay. I'm not his biggest fan. He's fine. It's fun watching him do it's fun watching him do weird magic and horrible magic rather than kind of Harry Potter magic.
Yeah.
He's doing some unpleasant things to people in this.
Right.
What else if I power through it? Everly is really good. That's Die Hard in a Room starring Salma Hayek.
Right.
So yeah, the whole film takes place in this one apartment room with people coming to kill her and her trying to survive the night. That's quite good. Quite good fun. Silly again, but...
Nice. Why?
She is a prostitute who has been pretty much working as a slave for this gangland boss.
Right.
But she's also been working with the police, and the bloke finds out and so sends all these people to kill her.
Gotcha. Who would have thought it would be that hard, eh?
You'd be surprised. I don't know how she's so... why she's so good with a gun, though.
Right.
I didn't mention that in my review. Two really good documentaries as well I'll finish off with. Electric Boogaloo.
Yep.
The story of Canon Films. All the low-budget action that you watched in the 80s was made by these guys.
Yeah.
Like Missing in Action, a lot of Chuck Norris movies, Dolph Lundgren films.
Yeah.
And it's just the stories behind that. These two brothers from Israel who moved to Hollywood and tried to take on the big boys at their own game.
Yeah.
Very, very funny.
What's their kind of biggest movie? Is it like Missing in Action?
Yeah, I would say so. They did some good movies, like Runaway Train got nominated, I think won an Oscar maybe.
Right.
But probably the most famous films are the ones that were their downfall, when they tried to spend a bit more on the budget and it didn't quite work. And there was three in the space of 2 years. It was Over the Top.
Yeah.
They paid Stallone $10 million for that film.
Right.
And they'd never spent half than that, even on a movie before.
The whole film, right.
And it was a movie about arm wrestling that was never going to take off. Masters of the Universe.
Oh, well, that was theirs, was it? Right?
That was theirs. That was one of their great follies. That didn't really work. Apparently, there's one of the stories, Stallone came down and visited them on set and saw like Dolph Lundgren doing all this stuff. And he said to them, "You've given that guy lines?
Yeah.
Did you not know? You don't give that guy lines." And that's funny coming from Stallone.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Superman 4.
Right.
Yeah. Quest for Peace. Where they cast a male model as Nuclear Man, and they halved the budget halfway through. And so if you what they show, they point out that there's one shot of Superman like flying straight into the camera that's used maybe 12 times in the movie just with different backgrounds each time.
Oh my god.
But that's a really funny documentary. And then the other one is Future Shock, which is the story of 2000 AD, we've supported a little bit on the site which was done by Kickstarter through some people I know through Fright Fest. Really good, really good. If you don't know anything about 2000 AD, I think you'd find it interesting.
Yeah.
Or if you're an expert in it, I think there's some really good stories. It's properly warts and all. Like there's some big arguments over who came up with the idea for Judge Dredd.
Right.
The editor for the 10 years when it was apparently terrible talks about why it was so terrible when he was in charge. And
oh my God.
Yeah, really, really interesting movie. That hasn't got a release date yet, but we'll cover that one down the line.
Do you think we should do an IGN documentary, warts and all?
Or what would be the reason for doing a documentary this week, Alex?
Because we're closing?
IGN no. turned 18.
No, I do. Yes, IGN did turn 18.
Yeah.
Obviously not us, the bigger group.
Yes,
it's been around before that. It was N64.com. Per Schneider's been around since, I think, 1936. He's been on the internet, so... So we've been here in the UK for 8 years, but IGN, bless it, 18 years old. So it went out, got drunk and was sick in the gutter.
But on Monday, we got a nice little present to celebrate our 18th birthday.
The dead mouse under the studio.
Should we just inform everyone? So we're bringing you this podcast under tremendous hardship and amidst adverse circumstance because a mouse has died somewhere in the podcast studio and we can't even track the little blighter down.
No.
It's like a terrible version of Mouse Hunt.
Actually, we mouse think hunt it's a mouse.
It could be an intern that we had.
Or it could be the DJ Deadmau5.
Bear Park may have messed up the first recording of this podcast and we've killed him.
Yeah.
It's like Shallow Grave.
Kamali's not around today.
So the studio really smells. You come in the morning, it smells like death.
But this studio was built by Fred West, wasn't it?
Oh, no.
Did you see the Donald Trump tweet?
No. I like your idea about the documentary, though.
Do you?
Yeah. What will we call it? Who would play us?
Oh, God. Probably Ben Affleck, yeah.
Probably. All three of us.
In a documentary, we'd play us.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think you understand what documentaries are, Chris.
No, I don't.
Unless we do reenactments. You could do reenactments in a documentary, like the founding of
our There are a lot of fun stories that... probably should never see the light of day.
Can you? What about any from the London office that you can think of?
Well, I'm not going to say.
Okay.
Absolutely no way.
The comings and goings.
Exactly.
The highs and lows.
It's for a very different podcast.
It is.
But yeah, no, it's nice. The guys in the States put together a timeline of the history of the site, which was quite fun to look at. All the ways in which it's changed and evolved over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it?
What were you doing 18 years ago?
What year was that?
96.
Ah, that was my summer of love.
We're really good at maths. That I'm like, oh, my God, 18.
You're a 96.
You're a 96.
So what happened in the summer of love, Chris Tilly?
Train spotting Spice Girls.
You mean train spotting Spice Girls?
that was a very exciting summer. Oasis released Morning Glory.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on
that
summer.
Yeah, that was big.
Was that 96 or was that 95?
It was 96.
Right, okay.
It was definitely maybe 94. It was the year I left school and went to uni. So that summer I went on a lad's holiday with 20 lads and then I went on holiday with 25 girls and one bloke.
Wow.
Yeah, those were two good holidays.
Right.
Magaluf and Tenerife, they were.
There you go.
Wow.
Classed it up. And I knocked my front teeth out on my 18th birthday.
Good.
Amazing.
Classy.
What were you doing?
So are they fake then?
Yeah, these are caps. I've got little stumps here because I snapped off the actual teeth.
Caps as in cap guns? No. You don't bite really hard and they go off?
No.
Okay.
What were you doing 18 years ago, Alex, in 96?
You've probably been in the game industry
for 25 years.
You were already grizzled.
I was working on a PlayStation magazine. We put Lara Croft on the front cover.
Ooh.
And obviously, back then, no one really knew who she was.
I was telling one of my our US colleagues in Gamescom that you were there when they announced Tomb Raider. And he was like, oh, so like, what, the reboot, Crystal Dynamics? And I was like, no. Tomb Raider. No, way back when in Egypt.
It was. I've spoken about this trip many times, but it just doesn't happen like that anymore.
Back in the good old days.
Bizarrely, so one of the guys that I went on that trip with has just become friends with me on Facebook and was retelling some of the stories. And we were staying in this hotel really high up on the 25th floor or something like that. And we're all quite drunk. And he decided, he'd locked himself out of his room. So he decided to climb over the balconies, like three balconies along and shimmy in. And he was throwing like metal plates off of the balcony and into the swim pool. And then this laser sight came up from the bottom. And it was probably just a laser pointer, but it freaked us the shit out.
So, yeah. And he was lasered to death. And what were you doing 18 years ago, Dad?
I was 10. And I went, I remember...
Suckling on your mum's teeth.
Oh, 10?
Gee whiz, Alex.
That betrays more about you and your family techniques. Fred?
I need a little bit of love, that's all.
All right, Fred West. I remember on the day of the England-Scotland match going to town with my mum and going to Thomas Cook and booking a holiday. Most exciting moment of my life. Booking a holiday to Disney World. And then midway through the booking process, realising that I didn't have any shorts on. I had my boxer shorts on and I'd come into town with my boxer shorts on.
That's the stuff of dreams. That doesn't happen.
I looked down and I had like little Mr. Happy boxer shorts on. But obviously I was 10 so you could get away with it, but I felt tremendously embarrassed.
Did your mum not notice?
We were booking. No, she was busy booking the holiday. And
but there's the point.
Oh, when we're leaving the house? Yes. I don't know.
Daniel, you're not wearing clothes. It's fine.
Was this before or after the match?
Before.
Before.
It was town in the morning and then get
Because it was
home.
A 3 o'clock kickoff.
And then get back in the afternoon.
I remember my dad went to that game.
What? He saw the Gazza moment.
Wow.
Blimey.
Special.
He came back very happy. Sorry, Scottish listeners.
Yeah.
Right, should we move on with the actual podcast?
Well, before we do that, one thing we should say is that this podcast has been nominated for an award.
Has it really?
Yes, it has.
I don't believe it.
Me neither, but it has. So the Games Media Awards are happening in October, so well, this month. Luke has been nominated for Rising Star, and the podcast has been nominated for Gamer's Choice. Now, a bunch of people in the room somewhere are going to vote for Luke's award, so there's nothing we can do about that. But this podcast, you can, because it's a public award, and you can vote for it by going to surveymonkey.com. This is a URL that's going to be a bit of gobbledygook, but we'll put it in the story and we'll flash it up on the screen as well. surveymonkey.com/s/22957JP.
Catchy,
as memorable as our email address.
I think we're gonna work on getting a pithier way of doing it.
URL, sure. So I'll repeat that again slowly. surveymonkey.com/s/. This is a bit you need to remember. 22957 Jurassic Park JP.
I think people should just look at the story and click on that.
You could do it. Or yeah, you could search for it, MCV Gamer's Choice. But don't forget to click on the IGN UK one.
Or check our Facebook page, IGN UK, or the Twitter feed, IGN UK. We'll be putting it up there probably every hour on the hour for the next 2 weeks.
We need the Duck Hunters to rally.
Yeah, well, they've been great already. Yeah. So I popped it up on the Facebook
also,
page.
Also, if you listen to the podcast and you do like it, please vote. And also maybe get 10 of your nearest and dearest to vote as well.
Yeah.
Every day for the next 2 weeks.
And get them to get 10 people.
Yeah. And then,
everyone in the country and then everyone in the world will have voted for us.
If we can get everyone in the country to 66 million votes, that's about how many people in the country, I think, isn't it? Something like that. That'd be good.
Voting twice.
If
132 million, 136, I don't know. Exactly. I do words, I don't do numbers.
If you help us to win this... Right. We'll finally review the Babadook on the podcast.
Yes.
Because Dan's actually seen it.
Yes. And we...
You read the review, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about it on here.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and the episode we've put forward for consideration for the award is the Blabadook episode.
The Blabadook.
A classic.
Oh, come on. We really want
Somebody
to win this.
Somebody might have said. We do really want it. It means a lot to us. So anything you can do would be hugely appreciated. Let's move on to the news.
Yes.
So, first up, some Uncharted 4 concept art has been leaked. It's from scans from the Art of Uncharted 4 book, which that seems really early that's kind of doing the rounds already, considering the game's not coming out for goodness knows how long. And the world looks quite bloody miserable, if I'm quite honest. So, lots of pictures, and one of them looks like the lost city of Atlantis. Here.
Ooh.
Does that look like Atlantis? Well, it looks like a crumbling city.
It's an underwater city.
Underwater. So... you've got a picture of Nathan Drake going sort of staggering along the beach, but it's not a nice looking beach, it's a rainy looking beach. You've got other pictures of Drake and two other people, I assume it's Drake, in a waterlogged city. So there's a recurring theme here. Lots of rain and water in Uncharted 4.
You saw that
4.
In the teaser trailer as well, in the jungle.
Maybe that's the power of PlayStation 4.
Rain.
Realistic rain.
Realistic puddles.
Dynamic droplets.
It's nice to see some of the environments, because that's the thing I wonder most about Uncharted is where it's going to be set.
Yeah.
Like, I think the gameplay is going to be similar to what we've had in the past.
Yeah.
I think the story, obviously, we don't know much about that. You know, Drake's older. Looks quite, to use a filmic term, Chris, the mise-en-scene.
Mm-hmm.
Looks quite depressing. So is that feeding into the characters? He experienced tragedy. He's a bit older. We know that from the trailer.
Yeah.
But you always want to know the environments. Like, yeah. That's a big part of Uncharted, is looking around really interesting environments and cool parts of the globe. Well,
obviously, you can see that. That's an image there. Sorry for listeners who are listening rather than watching the video. But it looks like, a village that's crumbled for whatever reason. But you can quite easily see him
earthquakes
jumping around that. And I just hope... So my problem with Uncharted 3 is that overall it was good, but the levels went on for too long. Make them short, punchy, and exciting. That's what
you want
from Uncharted.
Shorter, sharper thrills.
And more variation.
What about him walking around in the rain for a good couple of hours? Just maybe he's too old for it.
Well, he's walked around
he's literally
in the desert
too old for it.
With heat kind of stress for Big Pit 3. Now, maybe this is the opposite.
Heat stress.
I can't remember the one. What's it called?
Heat stroke?
Sunstroke.
That'll do, yeah. Heat stress, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, but that's, you know, it's good to see that. Hopefully we'll see more of Uncharted 4. Probably not until E3 next year, I wouldn't have thought.
No.
Great. Well, from one visual story on our audio podcast to another visual story on our audio podcast.
You can watch this podcast on the internet with your eyes.
I'm just saying.
Do we flash up any images there?
I'm just saying. The potentially award-winning podcast that just deals in pictures.
It hasn't won an award yet.
I said potentially.
Oh, potentially, sorry.
I have to do a story I don't want to do now as well, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I'm doing a story about Episode 7's Chrome Troopers.
Yeah.
So...
put some, like, there's life been into some, it.
Well, I'm not happy about it, because I'm going to have to read spoilers that I don't want to know.
Yeah, but they're probably not true.
There's been leaked concept...
Let's report them then.
There's been leaked concept art from Star Wars Episode 7 purporting to show the movie's new bad guys. And they're calling them Chrome Troopers in this story.
Why are they calling them Chrome Troopers?
Well, look at the picture on the audio podcast and you'll see.
Can you not describe it with your dulcet tones?
No, because I can't actually see it. I didn't print out the pictures, so...
A while ago there was a revised Stormtrooper helmet which was leaked. I don't know if it was real or not. So it's basically that, but chrome, and they've got hoods over the top, a bit like kind of
Sith-esque.
Anyway, they look super badass.
And then there's speculation that the Chrome Troopers and their rumored link to Adam Driver's character. But that's very spoiler heavy. Should I read that out?
I don't know that, so let's skip that.
Okay.
If you want to know that, check out the story on the site. But for me, I just saw Chrome Stormtroopers, and that's all I cared
about. So I was off last week when this story got published, and I looked at the site, and I just thought, that's got to be a typo. So he made a really weird typo there. And I looked at the picture, and is this... just a bit weird, isn't it?
Why?
I don't know. Having them in... Well, why would you wear a cloak and a hood to, like, disguise your identity and be a bit stealthy and secret, but underneath you're highly reflective?
But maybe they're not. Maybe that's not that.
Maybe it's true.
Maybe they reveal their hoods when they're fighting in bright sunlight, and the sunlight bounces off their heads and it distracts their enemies, and that's their advantage.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you remember in Star Wars Episode 1 there was that incredibly shiny ship on Tatooine?
Yes, I didn't remember that.
I was thinking, like, oh god, get fingerprints all over that. It's like a Brabantia bin.
Exactly. You wouldn't believe it. See, I've got a dual lit toaster. It doesn't come up well.
Enough said.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Destiny.
Oh, it's back to me.
Yeah, good, come on now.
Right, Destiny.
You put together this running order.
I know I did. And I put together two stories that I hadn't read before.
Alex,
5 minutes.
You've given yourself story stress.
No, sorry. I story streak.
Is this a visually led story?
You'll be pleased to know it's not. So, a bug in Destiny, which came with a new patch, has revealed, according to us, a ton of new incoming content. Basically, it's a load of new single-player missions or fire team strikes, raids, etc., based on some of the maps that are there already. So I will read it out to you. So there are two new planned expansions, if this bug is to be believed. One is called The Dark Below, and we're all aware of The Dark Below, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
House of Wolves. Sorry. House of Wolves.
He loves House of Wolves, doesn't he?
I just like The Dark Below.
Wow.
That's what I call my balls.
Exactly. Some of the missions on The Dark Below, The Awakening, happened on the moon for a level 20 story mission for a fire team of 1 to 3 players. I think that's what it says here. It's very blurry. And then you've got something called The Seed. So it's a swing of The Dark Below, a mission called The Seeding.
Come on, together, Alex.
That's only a level 18 story, and it's easy. So I think that probably is referring to your balls. Elsewhere, you got the House of Wolves, Wolves Harvest, which is level 20 story, fire team mission for 1 to 3 players, co-op, and then another Dark Below thing taking place on the moon, Crotter's End, a level 28 raid. So that's pretty high level.
Crotter's End.
Ding. Fire team 6 players, PlayStation Plus required weekly rewards.
We need to get back into it, Al.
I know, so...
You've lost your way slightly.
Well, I played some Crucible over the weekend. Saturday, I really enjoyed it. I was holding my own. I was doing...
Dark Blur.
I was holding my Dark Blur. Yes,
holding exactly. Your scrotus end.
Yeah. And I was doing all right. And because obviously I think I was level 10 or level 11 at the time, but playing against level 24, 25 people. And every time you get a kill, obviously you get a lot more experience. So in about 2 hours, I was leveling up every single time. And then Sunday, I went on again and I was absolute horsecock. it just wasn't very good.
Mm.
And it was just, I was getting destroyed left, right and centre, and it wasn't fun, so I stopped. And I haven't played it since.
Oh.
I know.
It's a sorry tale.
Let's rectify that.
Let's rectify that, yes. Well, I'll get back on it. Because I was enjoying it a lot, but I just don't like... this is the reason why I don't play many multiplayer games, is that if you're competing on a relatively even playing field, it's fun. If you get destroyed the moment you appear, it's not. So, there you go. That is the Destiny story.
Okay.
Last story from Danielle.
So, the last story is Ben Affleck appeared on Live with Kelly and Michael, which used to be Kelly and Regis. It's like Good Morning America.
Right.
He's been on a bloody everything, actually. If you've, if you're on your Twitter, every...
Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Apart from IGN. I'll be on IG.
It's not.
And he revealed on the show that he was really interested in purchasing the Batsuit that he wears in the upcoming film Superman vs. Batman. And he was interested until the point where they told him how much it would set him back.
So is there only one?
I can't imagine there's only one.
I was going to say, how do they make a sequel if they've sold it to him?
It sold it to him. Oh, sorry, guys. Also, that, shutting down production.
That'd absolutely honk by the end of filming, wouldn't it?
There'll be multiple versions of it that are slightly different.
Dark below.
They'll allow him to do different things. Like there'll be one that's better for when he sat in the car, I bet, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they said it cost...
Different suit for sitting in the car.
No,
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean.
So
in filmmaking purposes, it'll be really...
I know.
Yeah. Guess how much? Well, you know how much. It's $100,000. I can't imagine it costs that much to make.
$100,000?
Yeah.
But he's Ben Affleck. He's being paid about $25 million for it. If he wants the suit.
And I thought, that's not actually that much.
I think the news here is not so much how much the suit is worth, is Ben Affleck's a bit tight.
Yeah.
He's just like, nah.
But do you think...
I think he was trying to blag it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm Batman. Give it to me.
Yeah.
If the film isn't a total disaster, you buy that in 5 years. That's worth loads, half a million.
And Ben Affleck
says,
and he said, for 100K. And then I said, well, maybe I'll just take a picture.
Wow, $100,000. So that's like
you don't need a picture.
60 grand.
It's really not like when you earn that much money.
Yeah.
And you, how much is he worth?
I found a figure online that he's estimated to be worth $75 million.
That's good enough for me. There you go.
We could all put 10 grand in.
I haven't got 10 grand.
Speak for yourself.
I'll whip round.
Well, you can put 10 grand in.
Well, yeah,
everyone who listens to this podcast put a pound in. We could buy it.
That's true.
Yep.
How do we do that? Can I have it on weekends?
We could do... okay.
No, you just wear it for every podcast.
Quite happy.
Like that time we make Kilby wear the helmet for the podcast.
Alex. Although, again, that was a visual gag done before we did the video version.
It was funny, though.
It was funny.
Yeah, to be there.
So they said they spend a lot of money on every little detail. Like, it won't cost $100,000 to manufacture. No. So, that, you know, they are picking that figure out of thin air, really.
I think they're having a laugh.
They are having a laugh.
Yeah.
Now, I've got some other...
How much is an amazing bespoke suit?
Oh, like from Savile Row?
Yeah.
Why'd you go to Savile Row? What do you want? Old picture of the Batsuit. Yeah.
If you can do it for under 100,000, I'll have it.
That would be a good video. We should do that. Go to Savile Row.
You're doing it.
It's going to kill me to do it. No.
Get someone for Savile Row to analyse Bond suits. That'd be a good feature.
Mm.
Let's do that.
Let's do this off.
This is our editorial meeting. What are we doing? Okay.
That's our fly on the wall documentary. That's how we work. Just a glimpse there.
Now, that's pretty steep, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you set me with a little mission, didn't you, Alex?
I did.
To find some of the most expensive movie memorabilia of all time.
Yeah.
Do you want to know some of these? Do you want to do this?
We want to have a guess.
Do you want to have a guess?
Oh, what's going on?
I know. It's game time, Chris.
What happened?
Put on your game face.
Okay.
Yeah. You and me.
Yeah.
Got a guess.
These are some of the most expensive pieces of movie memorabilia. Right. Of all time.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to say it. Yep. I want you to both say a figure and work out who's closest.
All right.
Oh, crap. I need a pen. Thank you.
There we go.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Taking turns to go first.
I'll go first.
This is most expensive stuff of all time. Okay. we're going to start with the TIE Fighter from Star Wars Episode 4.
What do you mean, a TIE Fighter?
The model used in the TIE Fighter.
I would really like... Do you know what TIE stands for? In TIE Fighter?
No.
Twin Ion Engine.
Correct. Ding!
Never knew that.
TIE Fighter, gosh. Well, I would assume it's more than 100,000. So this is one of the originals from Episode 4. It would be worth...
Oh,
You'll be able to get your eye in after this one. I think it's
$3 million.
Okay, I'm going to go. Are we doing dollars or pounds?
Do dollars.
Okay, £100,000.
What? He said
dollars. $100,000.
All right, Chris. Just be different. Chris is closest. It is $402,500.
Bargain.
Oh, I nearly said that.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Number two.
Are you going up in value?
I'm going to dart around.
I was going to say, mix it
up. I'm going to dart around.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So we're going to go for the ruby slippers from Wizard of Oz.
I am going to go...
Why are you talking like that?
I'm going to go... $250,000.
All right.
This should be a game of speed as well.
Yeah.
This is dead air.
I'm really worried they're going to be really close. I'm going to have to do quick maths.
All right. In that case, I'll go 275.
He's gazumchi. So Alex is closest. It is $660,000.
I'd go for a TIE fighter rather than a pair of red slippers.
So it's best of five.
All right.
That's three out of five.
All right, I'm first.
Okay, so the Aston Martin from Goldfinger.
Oh! Which?
The Aston Martin from Goldfinger.
What is that? The DB5 or?
I think there's only, yeah.
I don't know.
It's an Aston Martin from Goldfinger. All
right. That'll be... Oh, God, I have no idea. $2 million.
Chris?
I am going to go $800,000.
Alex is closest. That is the most expensive movie prop of all time. $4.1
million. Wow. That's amazing.
Okay, best three out of five. Alex is one away on two. Next one.
Chris.
So.
Wow.
The Terminator model. Of the T-800, is he?
T-800, yeah.
From the first movie.
From Judgment Day.
From Judgment Day.
From Judgment Day.
Oh, okay. But still the T-800.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go...
Because the other one was visual effects.
Or I'm going to go $800,000 again.
Well, the T-800,000.
Alex?
I'm going to go $1 million. No, hang on.
I think... Chris is closest.
Yeah, I think
it's
a lot less.
$488,750.
Yeah, a lot less than that. If the TIE fighter was $402,000. Okay. I'm such a dingbat.
Okay.
Or maybe I'm just playing it for the last round.
So,
here we go.
So, two each. Decider.
I hope you're playing along at home.
You don't get this on other podcasts. Okay,
it's
so.
Good, but it's not right. Here's another.
Okay.
Hey, watch this. Hey.
Okay. Audrey Hepburn's little black dress from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
$230,000.
$230,000?
Yeah.
That's the noise he makes when he thinks of Audrey Hepburn.
Oh,
$150,000. Dollars.
Yeah.
150 quid.
150 million. So Alex wins.
Ah, well played.
So that is the third most expensive piece of movie memorabilia at $922,000.
Amazing.
So number one was Aston Martin. Number two, one I didn't read out, was a car. This is the car driven by Elvis in the movie Spin Out.
Right.
For $1.2 million. That's definitely the Elvis effect on that one.
Mm.
Number four. The Cowardly Lion costume from The Wizard of Oz was $805,000.
Right.
That's interesting, isn't it?
There you go.
Very good. Yeah. Right. Let's have a chat, shall we?
Let's have a chat. What have we been doing for the last half hour?
We got an email from Kyle Barrett, which I thought could open up an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
So Kyle says, with the news that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon 2 will be Netflix's first feature film, does this mark the start of a new era of film viewing and making? Netflix is currently dominating the television market with its mostly great original programming such as House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. So will this venture see the company come to the forefront of an increasingly stagnant film industry? Will the cinema become less popular with audiences when great films are released at the same time worldwide and can be viewed when and how the viewer wants? Or will it just become the latest fad that won't last very long? What do you guys think?
Oh, wow. What a great question.
Mm. Thank you, Kyle. So, yeah, this was big news this week that it's going to be next summer that, that Crouching Tiger will premiere in cinemas and on Netflix on the same day. And interestingly, there's an addition to this, which I mentioned to Alex just before we came on air. The several cinema chains have said they will now be boycotting the film in America, because the big thing for the cinema chains is to have this window, which is getting smaller and smaller.
Why would you go to the cinema if you've got it on Netflix for £6?
Well, I don't know, because of the spectacle.
Experience.
Yeah, maybe, but...
It's like, you know, you didn't really enjoy Gravity as much as the rest of us, and you watched it on a small screen.
But I would say that Gravity is probably more geared towards that than Crouching Tiger.
Yeah, but I think Crouching Tiger is going to be in through. I mean, I look, it's one of my favourite action movies.
Is it?
Yeah, I absolutely love the original. And I think they were talking about it being in 3D as well. Yeah,
right.
That's really appealing to me. Like, more and more, I think, of the big movies now are, they're trying to give you all these different hooks to make, you know, the IMAX and the 3D to make you
D-box.
Need to see them on the big screen.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Christopher Nolan movies and all the superhero movies. So I can see myself still going to the cinema.
So this kind
it's just when it's the drama, you know, when it's a film without the bangs and whistles.
Yeah.
Then yeah, I totally agree. I'll watch that at home.
Well, I think we do that sometimes. You if you miss a film at the cinema, you go, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't feel like a cinema film to me.
Yeah.
I can imagine myself equally enjoying that, watching that on a small screen.
Yeah.
Increasingly, your small screen is an increasingly bigger screen.
Yeah.
And a more cinema-like experience in terms of quality and stuff like that. But this is kind of the internet version of something that happened with Ben Wheatley's film. Field in England, because that did a simultaneous release in cinemas and on DVD and Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. So this is almost like pushing it a little bit further, that you don't even have to go out and buy a Blu-ray DVD.
Is it
it's going to be like come straight to your house.
Well, it was on Film 4 as well.
Of course it was.
So was it part of, like, you get it for your £6 a month Netflix package, or do you have to pay?
Well, this particular deal.
Yeah.
I don't know the ins and outs, but I would imagine there's going to be no additional cost to that. I'm sure of it.
Netflix must have paid a ton of cash for that.
Netflix,
but at the same time,
cash.
It's not a huge release. It actually, I don't think it's got. It hasn't got the, because this is the less appealing aspect of this particular film. It's not got the same director. I don't think it's got the same actors.
Right.
So it's going to be one of those sequels more in name than actual.
It's been a long time since the last.
It's been a long time. So this isn't actually a huge release. This movie.
Yeah.
This sounds huge
because obviously the name and
It's not like Gone Girl is doing this.
Yeah.
You know, this week. This is a film that, you know, they probably did a reasonable deal on it, but I don't think they would have had to break the bank to do this. It was just it's the first one.
It's a good stepping stone, though, because you can, in the next Gone Girl, I wouldn't be astonished if that happens. Obviously, Fincher says, you know, he has a relationship making stuff for Netflix.
Well,
stuff like this is going to happen and chip away at it. The Daredevil, the Marvel TV show, again, is going to raise the kind of prestige of Netflix.
Well, that's what I wonder is if it will just change the kind of films we see in cinemas, and this kind of, which is already happening if you look at the box office, but, you know, all dramas, all thrillers will go on telly at the same time as the cinemas.
Yeah.
And then it will be the blockbusters, the ones that have the window.
Yeah. You've almost seen that already with Netflix and documentaries. Like, documentaries are notoriously hard to secure a distributor for, especially at like a nationwide level. Just go straight to Netflix, get on, you'll get a much bigger following and audience.
Yeah.
And then you might be able to do a cinema release at the same time in some way.
I wonder if they'll get the... Because obviously they will need an uplift in terms of subscribers for in order for it to make kind of business sense. I don't know. Not based on one film, I wouldn't. But obviously I don't get to go to the cinema that much. Having the ability to see films at the same time as you guys without having to kind of organise a babysitter or this, that sounds really appealing to me.
Well, no one's going to buy Netflix for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon 2,
no.
I don't believe. But I bought Netflix because of Breaking Bad.
Right.
So if they did a deal like that with a studio where Fincher's next five films are on Netflix, then maybe that would be the hook for other people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a certain back, all the Bond films suddenly come to Netflix.
The problem with Netflix,
it's like iTunes. A lot of people
You can just disappear. You can subscribe and then you can leave it. So you subscribe and pay a month or get your free month, and like the number of like, oh, come back to Netflix, please, here's a month, here's 3 months.
Yeah.
It's easy to
do it all
sale.
For free.
Yeah.
Well, you say that.
Ah,
I'm not.
You don't like it. But I thought
I just don't consume enough TV at home
yeah.
to make it Valid.
I wanted to look up a quote because I think it's pertinent here. It's the Lucas and Spielberg take on what's going to happen to cinemas over the next kind of 10 years, 20 years. You're going to end up with fewer theatres, bigger theatres with a lot of nice things. Going to the movies will cost $50 or $100 or $150 like what Broadway costs today or a football game.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that cinemas will remain, but like you're saying, that experience of having all the bells and whistles will become more and more pronounced. And it will be like going to the theatre, where it's like a special event and a special occasion.
Well, some of my friends who are geeky film people like myself, they go to the cinema mainly to the Prince Charles to watch
event,
yeah, event stuff, old stuff, you know, double bills and classic 80s movies and things like that. And for me, you know, I've talked about it before on here, but that the cinemas I go to in Austin, the Draft House cinemas, the experience they give me makes me leave, would make me leave my home. The food, the drink, just the trailers, the strictness with which they won't let anyone have their phone on at any point during the film or talk. That would get me out of my house.
Or Secret Cinema recently, of course.
Yeah, Secret Cinema event. And equally, you know, I emailed you guys yesterday because I thought it was pretty amazing, the news that the biggest film this week in UK cinemas wasn't The Equalizer, which was the big new release, but it was one day a live screening of Billy Elliot. And it's the first time an event screening has gone to number one in the UK box office. That's really interesting to me. That
people watching a film of the stage show rather than going to see the stage
unlike
show
the smaller kind of independent or art house cinemas have been doing this in the last few years. Like they show the National Opera in cinemas. They show Danny. I watched Danny Boyle's Frankenstein in the cinema.
I haven't done the opera thing, but my uncle said it was the most wonderful. He went a few weeks ago. He said it was just the most wonderful experience. Like you really felt like you were there. And there's additions. You know, you go backstage beforehand. They talk to the cast and things. And it's just so cheap. It's like £10 rather than £100.
I just remember something else. Like some cinemas show Wimbledon and they show the World Cup. So it's using theatres as theatres for places of public broadcast, but not necessarily film theatres.
Yeah. Well, we watched the first episode of the last season of Breaking Bad
on Gotham
in a cinema
the week as well.
And Gotham. With TV being so good, again, the Draft House has done that before. They'd screen Game of Thrones or Mad Men. Because the TV's become such a kind of collective experience now that we're all talking about the next day at work, why not watch it with your friends?
I've thought about this for years now, and I feel it's a case that Netflix is being really innovative, progressive, pushing the envelope, and cinemas are staying static and just jacking up the prices elsewhere rather than offering a more diverse experience. Like some cinemas offering sport and theatre are trying to do that. And for ages, when you watch when Game of Thrones starts and you look at it and you look how beautiful it looks, you look at the production values, I would totally pay for a season pass at a cinema and say, here's 30, 40 quid up front and I can go every week for 12 weeks and watch the entire season on a big screen.
Or binge watching, you know, you do the marathon at home, why not have the option of doing it that weekend in a cinema, watching, you know, all 10 House of Cards if you want to
do that. Well, I know so many people who do these marathons and they watch in their living room and it's middle of the day. They could go somewhere special and there's like food and drink put on.
But it's the environment, I think. And like the multiplex environment is just unpleasant. We've got like a little local cinema where we live, and you can sit there, you have a table to yourself, you can have drinks there.
It's very civilized.
It's very civilized.
Put your feet up. There's an article in Time Out this week with they're trying to find London's best cinema, and that's interesting. They've got various celebrities talking about their local, and someone's got the Curzon Soho, someone the Prince Charles, someone the Lady Nesta Square, and it's not. Maybe they need to become more of these cultural local hubs rather, you know, because the multiplex did come to dominate. But I feel like more and more now people are moving away from that because of, you know, especially because of the texting and the talking and the lack of manners these days in the cinema.
I think you feel more justified paying a higher cinema ticket price if you go somewhere and it's also a beautiful place to be for a few hours.
You have
rather
a glass of wine in the bar beforehand.
You go, I feel like I've had a proper night out, rather than going to a multiplex where it's just awful and your shoes are sticking to the floor and I feel terrible.
Like it's an interesting time we're at though, isn't it? It's an interesting time though. Like I think it'll be, in 10 years time, it'll be a very different world we live in terms of how we watch movies and where we watch them. But where that'll be, I don't know. But it's a great question, Carl. It'd be good to hear everyone, you know, the listeners' thoughts on this.
Yeah. How do they get in touch?
I've got no idea. I reckon they could email ign_UKfeedback@ign.com.
Yes.
I think you might be right.
That's the first time I've ever got that right.
Yeah. Well done.
I didn't realise it was at the top of all the emails. Oh, by the way, we're going to do reader feedback now. You know, I always have a moan at Luke about it. I've done it this week, so if I've done it wrong, have a go at me.
All right.
Okay, good.
Who's got the first piece?
So I believe I do. It's from Scott Mackey. And he said, couldn't help but notice that Doctor Who hasn't been mentioned since Series 8 started. So what are your opinions on Series 8? Peter Capaldi as the Doctor so far. For me, Series 8 is an improvement over the last series, but it's still got some way to go before it's back to its former glory. And I think Capaldi is great as the Doctor.
So I actually haven't watched a single episode, I'm afraid to say.
I have.
Okay, and I know Dan has, so why don't you two take it away?
Yeah, dipped into it slightly.
So I watched the first two episodes. I found the first episode was really clunky. I didn't enjoy it. And obviously he's finding his feet and they've got a lot to explore.
He doesn't have any feet in the first episode.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a weird plot line.
It's far out there, man.
And then the second one, I can't even remember what happened in it. And I thought, right, I'm going to download these, watch them on the train. And I just kind of got sidetracked with Hannibal and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got no desire to go back in and watch it, which is a shame, because I really enjoyed Matt Smith. Even when it was a bad episode, I still enjoyed him.
Mm.
And I haven't warmed to Capaldi.
I
think I need to give him...
I think we should say, none of us are really the biggest Doctor Who fans, especially like Tom left, and Tom was our resident Doctor Who fan. So we get a freelancer to review it for us, but he's been quite positive on the series on a whole.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of episodes that I do want to check out. I want to check out Listen, which is kind of the horror-tinged episode.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This week's episode apparently is kind of got a lot in common with John Carpenter's The Thing. I might check that one out as well.
Yeah. I think my problem is that I'm not a huge Peter Capaldi fan, even though I love the thick of it and him in that. I'm not a big fan of him in other things. And so what I kind of needed was you guys or someone else to say, wow, you got to check it out. And no one's been doing that.
No.
So it's not really made me kind of search it out. But maybe I'll check out the Listen episode as well.
Yeah.
I've heard good things.
Philip Cowlam-Jones writes in saying, having been pondering Battlefield Hardline, I began wondering why we see few collaborations between game studios, even within companies. Certainly there's a lot of potential there, but it may be just too difficult to manage. Still, I think there are a few matchups that make sense. To keep it EA-themed, how about a game from BioWare and Respawn? Great storytelling meets some of the best modern gameplay, in my opinion. Any suggestions? Well, like companies like Ubisoft, they do, a lot of their studios collaborate on games. I think Assassin's Creed has got like 5 or 6 different studios all contributing different parts to that game.
That's kind of crowdsourcing.
Technologically.
Yeah.
Sharing hardware.
I mean, there's a difference between collaborating and then just like, oh, we need all hands on deck to do different parts of this to make release time.
I think the point he's making there is, you know, a studio that's renowned for their pedigree in one part of the game, like BioWare, for example. It's a tricky one because, you know, I think... Well, DICE doing the multiplayer for Hardline makes sense.
Playing to their strengths and Visceral doing...
I don't think DICE are very good at making single-player games at all. So, as far as I'm concerned, take them the heck out of there.
I think it's a great idea. I think the only problem would come is, you know, video game development is incredibly international.
Yeah.
And if you want a single-player game to have some sort of cohesion, I do think it needs to be made under one roof, probably.
Yeah.
So... That must maybe where it would fall down.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some other examples, like, I don't know, Gearbox, you know, doing Aliens, Colonial Marines, and whoever they farmed it out to. The problem you've got there is that you can lose direction very, very quickly, and one studio thinks that you're doing one thing, but actually you're doing something else, and very, very difficult to manage, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. I have an email from Jason Tilling who says, hi guys, I was listening to your podcast last week concerning which TV box sets you're watching and wanted to know how you choose which new TV series to start watching and getting into. Certainly with all the new TV series coming for autumn, like The Last Ship, The Strain, The Leftovers, how do you choose which ones to give some viewing time to? Do you base it on recommendations from friends, actors, genre, producer, or like me, do you watch maybe the first 3 episodes and if by the end of the 3rd you are not hooked, give up? Good question.
Well, I just listened to you lot.
Yeah.
So you got started on Hannibal, although, me raving.
That's how
about.
I got on, Hannibal, that. I'm trying to think how I got into Arrow. I think you
mentioned it. It was me. I was telling you that it was okay, but the people were saying it was great, and then so you gave it a go and you really liked it.
Yeah.
But at first you didn't like it.
You're well stuck into it.
Well, I, it was one of those, it was plain fodder.
Yeah.
So I think I was going over to San Francisco and easy, it's like, watch. You know, you watch kind of seven episodes back to back and it's like,
easy.
And that's when you get into
it. Yeah.
Breaking Bad, obviously, everybody's ranting and raving about Breaking Bad. But new stuff, it's, I don't know.
Do you ever try it and then like just go, I've had enough of this?
Well, I would say most of the stuff that I watch tends to have been...
It's almost pre-vetted.
Exactly, yeah.
I think that's a smart thing to do. It's wait, don't rush into, don't be an early adopter.
Yeah.
Because you can get burnt that way, but just wait
canceled,
and see.
Yeah.
Get cancelled. That's a big
problem.
That's
the worst, isn't it? Yeah.
Because also...
If you're really into something, and it gets canned.
The best filmmakers in the world, Spielberg, Fincher, Abrams, I'll still wait, you know, just because their name's at the top of something.
Yeah.
I'll wait. You know, that Spielberg thing...
Taken. Do you remember Taken by Spielberg?
Yep.
Are you on about something else? I remember getting really into Taken, really getting on the bandwagon for that, going, this is going to be the greatest thing ever, is Spielberg doing Aliens?
Yeah.
And then it wasn't very good and it got canned.
He's lent his name to a lot of bands. Yeah,
that's the thing. It doesn't mean much anymore.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
You still haven't watched Band of Brothers, have you?
No. Nope.
Watch Band of Brothers.
Yeah, that's very good.
Cool.
I couldn't give you a bigger recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll watch. So exactly, that's exactly what I'm thinking though with The Strain and The Leftovers. I want to watch both of them, but I'm going to wait and see.
I just want to watch The Blacklist and Orphan Black because I haven't watched them.
I watched the first series of The Blacklist. I'm not going to watch the second series.
Okay.
It's all right.
Person of interest.
Orphan Black's okay. It's quite good fun. Didn't love it. I watched the first season. Not going to watch the second season.
Person of interest.
Haven't seen it.
Good.
So. Enjoying Ray Donovan.
Enjoying
Ray Donovan.
I need to watch Peaky Blinders because you keep raving about
it. It's good.
Okay, so next one is from Scott Penn. Hey, Scott. He said he squealed like a little girl when I saw that Civ Beyond Earth was coming out. I have booked the entire week off work, sent out my advance out of contact memo to all retail partners in the country. He's kind of a big deal, Scott. And head office. Mm-hmm. And my fiance is fully prepared to cook for the week and keep me hydrated.
He does give some context. It's a little bit of a good woman.
We don't want to go into the details. Much. Yeah. I guess you really can't grow out of games. And he wants to know, any games return you to your childhood like that? Or movies as well. Let's expand it to
movies. I was going
to
do that, yeah.
I think a new Mario game always does Mario that to me. Or a new Zelda, because those are the series that you've played throughout your life in various incarnations. Mm-hmm. So like playing a Zelda game always returns me to Christmas, the time Ocarina of Time came out. And I just played it all day in my pajamas.
Yeah.
I remember stopping, pausing at a boss fight, having my Christmas dinner, going straight back to it, just playing it all night and then going to bed.
Yeah.
That's all I did. And so it really takes you back to that time.
Yeah.
What about you, Seth?
Well, I think it would be Zelda, because I've kind of fallen out with Mario.
What happened?
We don't get on fair anymore. Well, you know, I prefer Luigi.
Is it since he moved in next door?
No, it's just I don't have the kind of time or patience to be good at those games that require precision pixel jumping.
But you still got it when you lend your hand to it, haven't you, Al?
It was the cookie cutter levels in Mario Galaxy. It's like, you know what? I can't be doing this. So, yeah, Zelda.
What about you, Chris? What
well, you know what it'll be, don't you? Next Christmas, it'll be when the Star Wars music starts at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and you hear that and you see the words on the screen.
Mm.
It's just going to be... You're going to get such a shiver up your spine. Even though you've been burnt a bunch of times by the prequels.
I remember that with the prequels. It's like, oh my God, I've waited so long for this. Oh.
Just you won't have the 20th Century Fox fanfare at the beginning.
Why not?
It's Disney.
Oh, yeah.
But you'll have the...
That'll be weird though, won't it? You won't have the...
That's a really good point.
But you'll still have the music. You'll still have the...
Yeah.
The
but it's almost like in your head...
But that is part of it.
In your head,
it's one... In. Yeah,
it's almost like the intro that tees up the Star Wars thing.
But yeah, it's what you grew up on. So for me, it was when I went to Odeon Leicester Square to watch Indiana Jones 4. And that's where I'd seen Indiana Jones Last Crusade in 89. And I went with my brother. And so the start of that was really special.
Yeah.
And it was the same actually with Superman Returns.
Right.
Because he used the music as
Of course.
That's such a big part of it. But when that music started up, I felt like I was transported back to childhood.
I'm gonna have this moment next year as well with the like that music is so evocative. I can't imagine them not using it.
Yeah.
Even though it's Giacchino, he's gotta use that music in some way.
He has to.
And it'll take me back to watching that for the first time in 1993 on the island of Jersey.
Yep.
There you go.
I can remember where I was sitting in the cinema with my mum and dad.
Really?
In the Bromley Odeon.
And I hid three times in the movie. I hid when Gennaro gets killed, when Muldoon gets killed, and when the Thesaurus spits in Nedry's face. I got scared.
There you go.
Good question.
That's why you're scarred for life.
Yeah. Lots of good questions this week, I think.
Adam Wrigley writes in saying, I wanted to know what you think about British people saying season instead of series, because I know...
I spoke too soon.
This is the talking point.
This is awesome.
A lot of people do it, especially people in my school. He's 15. I think that maybe we should say series instead of season, because we shouldn't let ourselves be swallowed by American culture. And there's a person in my year who even has an American twang in their accent. But I think I'm being too dramatic and annoyed about it. Love to hear your thoughts. Ooh. As other pod people say.
I think this is a great question.
So Scarlett starts, she, because of Frozen, she starts singing things with American, like, you want to be able to know me? Why are you saying it like that?
Bloody Broadway singing as well. Yeah. It does my nut in.
Yeah. Well, I get a series to me signifies six episodes. Like a British series. Yeah. Like Red Dwarf season 3 is six episodes. Where a season is 20 odd episodes, because it will span an entire calendar season.
Yeah.
I guess that's how I use it.
So would you say it's the latest X-Factor season?
I would say Doctor Who series. Oh, I don't know, because that's 13 episodes. That's
split, isn't it?
I think for a British show, I would tend to use series. In American, I would use the word season. Right. That's kind of probably how I do it, I think.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I know where you're coming from. I hate sort of giving up English words to use kind of American terms. But because I've been writing about TV for IGN for so long, you don't want to keep saying the word season or the word series all through an article. So I just use them both to mix it up.
You mix it up.
And therefore, it's just something I'm used to doing now. I don't know what will come out of my mouth next time I have to talk about a season or a series.
There you go.
Who knows? It's unpredictable.
You never know.
But I like to live on the edge.
Good.
Okay, James Lewis has some quickfire questions for us. I'll ask the first two.
Okay.
What jobs would you guys do if you weren't in games journalism? Think about that, and I'll ask the second one as well.
I thought you said they're quickfire. I'll try and answer really quick.
Who are your favourite game/film critics?
Oof. Okay. If I wasn't... Oh, I don't know. I've no idea. I'd be a tree surgeon.
Mm.
Something outdoorsy. And then I'd probably get cold and go, oh, I'm done like this.
You should design a tree surgeon game.
How boring would that be?
Your twin passions.
And in terms of games critics, I admire Simon Parkin. I think he's very good.
Yeah.
Film critics, I wouldn't say I've got a favourite. Probably Chris Tilley.
Very nice. Very correct answer, because I am actually quite good. Dan?
So if I wasn't a games film journalist, whatever I am, mm-hmm. I think I was kind of already starting to teach English. But I probably would have had an entirely different career. I would have liked to have been a scientist. Probably a geneticist. But
invented dinosaurs.
I was very good at biology.
Mm. I'd be a ghost.
Particularly genetics. I did an A-level mod course in genetics, which was pretty interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
In terms of critics, the one critic is quite... obviously, this is going to be a very obvious answer, but one of the reasons why I wrote film criticism for my university paper and thought film criticism was kind of viable and kind of influenced what I did after university to kind of get into this career was Mark Kermode.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching his Channel 4 Film 4 documentaries as a kid, the one on Halloween and the Fear of God documentary, mm-hmm. which is his Exorcist documentary. And that was like 97. And I thought, what, you can make a job writing and making TV shows about horror films.
Yeah.
This is amazing. This is what I want to do. And then I found out he did a PhD at Manchester University in horror literature, which is kind of what I started to do. I went to UCL to do a PhD in late Victorian horror fiction.
Yeah,
I was kind of modelling him unconsciously, and it kind of worked out in the end.
You're stalking him.
James added, what's the Mark Kermode IGN drama about?
Well, it's probably because I love him. Nah.
Do you remember this?
Remember this. I think this might have been before I started working here.
Yeah, he just said on the radio there it was one of my quotes.
Right,
it was for,
right.
I said there was I was quoted on the poster for the movie Red, not the one you mentioned earlier, the Bruce Willis one, and said it was great. I love that movie. He didn't like the movie and he was complaining about the poster and was like, who is this IGN anyway? Why are they on the poster? And then loads of people were kind of messaging us, telling
us.
He's
upset me now.
Yeah. So mine's a bit predictable what job I'd do if I wasn't in a movie journalist, because a lot of movie journalists the same. I'd like to be a screenwriter. And I keep trying. I'm just not very good at it, but I will get that football movie made.
Brilliant title.
And as for critics alike, I really like, I actually met the critic I really like in Austin last week. He's an American guy called Leonard Maltin.
Okay.
and he's been around donkey's years, and he's just a really smart, lovely man who's just, you know, there's no side to his reviews. He's just, it's really intelligent, thoughtful criticism. And so, yeah, that was really an honour to meet him, actually. And Jonathan Ross was like my marker mode. When I was growing up, he was making film documentaries, The Incredibly Strange Film Show. Yeah. And he did a book called The Incredibly Strange Film Book, which I've still got, about all these weird cult movies, the kind of stuff I was watching in Fantastic Fest. Yeah. So
it was weird when I first started working at IGN. I went to a screening and I sat kind of one seat down from Mark Kermode. I was like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah.
This is kind of like the realisation.
He's been stalking for so long, and then he was actually
eating the sandwich.
And I think a very quick last one that you have, Dan. It was just a little plug for one of our readers.
Very quick one. And this is Sean Smith, who's top, top bloke. He's going to do a 24-hour gaming session on Friday, the 10th of October. He's raising money for a hospital in Edinburgh that helps sick kids. They have raised over 60K over the years to make a difference, and he's hoping to add to that this year. Yep. So if you want to support Sean in his quest to raise money, you can go to www.justgiving.com/Sean. And that's S-H-A-W-N hyphen Smith.
Yeah, and is it 24-hour gaming kind of thing, isn't it, I believe?
Yes, full 24-hour gaming session.
Awesome. Yep.
So let's take a quick look at the games and films out this week. So I think this is the first week when there are loads of games.
Blimey.
Wow, this is a strong week for games and films.
So I guess the biggie is obviously Shadows of Mordor. That scored incredibly well on IGN. We've played it briefly here. I played it a bit at Gamescom.
Very pretty. It looks impressive. You can tell instantly it's quality.
Yeah. See, what I didn't realise, and you said to me, was that it's actually made by the guy behind Red Dead.
Yeah, he was involved, yeah.
So, and obviously you can tell that from the opening scenes. Like, it's pulling on your heartstrings. So there's a story behind it. It's not just going around and mindlessly and killing orcs, but an exceptional game by all accounts. Forza Horizon 2, obviously we did a ton of stuff for that early in the year. Again, as racing games go, they don't come much better than that. I need to play it yet. I haven't actually played it that much, but Luke Riley, our resident racing guy, said it is amazing.
It says that's the one to beat this year.
Yeah.
You can imagine that's going to be quite difficult.
Yeah, and obviously you've got Drive Club coming shortly, and the crew coming a little
Project
bit later
Cars.
On. So Project Cars potentially moving into next year, I heard. But anyway, we'll see. Super Smash Bros. 3D, not really my kind of game, 3DS, but good.
Very good, apparently.
Yeah. Minecraft, PS4.
Yeah, we talked about this a few weeks ago when it came out on Xbox One, but it's Minecraft. It's now out on everything. Yes. And kind of a bit more interesting, it's coming out on PS4 now, but it's Microsoft-owned.
Yeah. And then Sherlock Holmes, which I know nothing about, if I'm
It's another one of the Sherlock Holmes games, Crime and Punishment, kind of adventure games.
He's a character, he's a detective.
Yeah, there's been a Benedict Cumberbatch thing
never
recently.
Never heard of him, no. I thought he just made kind of cheap housing.
Yep.
No.
Films. You've seen some of these, Dan, haven't you, this week? So Dracula Untold is not the biggest release of the week, but we'll do that first.
Dracula Untold, review is up on site. I gave it 6.5, saying it's okay. It's really short film. It's 92 minutes long, but I would say it struggles to fill 92 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It gets cut straight to the action. So it's Vlad the Impaler, historical-ish take on Dracula mythos. He, in a quest to save his people from the invading Turks, he makes a deal with a vampire. He gets all the vampire's powers and will return to human form in 3 days if he doesn't bite someone and drink their blood.
Right.
It makes him into a really kick-ass dark superhero. Lots of action, quite stylish, but a little bit thin on the ground in terms of character stuff.
It's been advertised everywhere.
Yeah, and also it is kind of, I think, the first in the Universal's Monsters universe, even though they're not playing up that angle. There's very much a Avengers vibe to it.
Right.
Is Luke Evans any good?
I don't really think he's perfectly fine. I don't really buy the scenes with his kid and wife. I don't think he does that very well, but he's fine in the action stuff.
Gone Girl. Massive.
Blimey, I saw that last Friday. Yeah. That is a dark and twisted piece of filmmaking. It's very long. It's something like 167 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's necessarily long, because I think it wants you to think it's going to resolve itself midway through, and then it goes into uncharted territory and goes strange and weird and more sinister.
More dark.
Ben Affleck's perfect.
Yeah.
And also, so is Rosamund Pike.
She's good. I thought, I can imagine her being good in that role.
I don't really want to say much more than that, for obvious reasons.
But where does it sit in the kind of David Fincher pantheon?
It's kind of this, I think, you know, it feels of later Fincher. It's kind of, it fits right in amongst Social Network, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo and Zodiac. Zodiac's one of my favourite films of recent years. And it's not quite as dark as that. There's actually some funny moments in Gone Girl.
It's like a black comedy at times. Yeah,
it does play like that. Because I've not read the book, I was expecting something much darker along the lines of Zodiac. But there are definite laughs in there where you release tension. But yeah, it's beautifully made.
Yeah.
It's perfect, yeah.
Draft Day, which I've seen, is a Kevin Costner sports movie about draft day in the American football season. Now, I understand American football just about. Yeah. I didn't have a clue what was going on in this movie.
Okay.
When they were trading drafts, or it's just about him trading drafts with different people, different players.
Is it not like transfer deadline day? Or
It is, but it isn't, because all the clubs make trades with each other before the deals are done.
Right.
And I didn't really understand what these trades meant.
Right.
And they never explained it. So not their problems, my problem.
It's not made, you need to be a bit
but I nevertheless
savvy.
Enjoyed it. It was a bit Jerry Maguire-ish.
Okay.
And
okay.
Costner's great.
Yep.
And then With Nell and I is getting re-released, which Alex doesn't like and I didn't like but do like now.
I need to see it again. I remember not liking it very much when I saw it at university, because everyone at university was like, we have to watch this all the time. Honestly, I have to drink to it. It's like, I haven't seen it yet.
I find that whole thing so painful.
So go see Gone Girl.
Play Shadows of Mordor and also
Forza and Super Smash Brothers and Minecraft and Sherlock Holmes.
Wow, what a week.
What a week. That's it for this week's podcast. I am going to give the Gamers Choice thing one more plug, because we really do want to win it. SurveyMonkey.com/S/22957JP. That's SurveyMonkey.com/S/22957JP. Vote for IGN UK podcast for the win. Thank you very much. Thank you, chaps. We'll be back same time next week, and it's really not that long till episode 250.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before, because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.